Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talent, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
And good afternoon to all you who have joined us live on Facebook and are listening in on the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. I'm Naima Latif, and we've got an exciting guest for you as we get ready to join with Jana, joining us live from London. And we'll do that one later. As we get ready to join Jana live from London, and we're going to take a global look at peace today. So we'll be right back after this quick break, and we want you to stay with us.
Hi, I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. And in case you didn't notice the resemblance, we're also three sisters.
We're going to be coming to you every week, sharing our successes and our mistakes as we navigate our lives as moms, wives, sisters.
talk about it all. Race, politics, religion, economics, culture, and we'll take a look at everything from whether or not to use corporal punishment to how do you teach your children about sex. Look for our upcoming book, Growing Up Charles. It's a personal story about our lives growing up in Maple Park on Chicago's South Side. I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're Three Black Moms. Follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Three Black Moms.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
And we are back, and we are joined with our host live from London, Jana. Thank you so much.
Hi, good evening, everyone. It's such a pleasure to be here. I've been rushing around like a blue-tailed fly for the past couple of days, so I'm just going to settle for the next 2 hours so we can talk. Excuse me. Yeah, my guest today is going to be a lady called Brian. I'm really sorry. I really apologize if I mispronounced.
Yeah, his name is Brian Titambira. That's his name. I made sure I got that pronunciation correct. I remember that with many African languages, the emphasis, when it's a multisyllable word, the emphasis on the next to the last syllable. So I did remember that little thing about language.
Okay, yeah, because Spanish is like that as well. Now, I don't know if that's the African influence, but Spanish, the emphasis is usually on the second to last syllable as well. So that's interesting. Well, it's interesting to me anyway. Okay, my show notes have changed completely because we've got a guest coming, and I'm looking forward to speaking with him. I thought, for some reason, why do I think he was a lady when his name is Brian? I don't know. Brian Chitambira from Zimbabwe. Excellent. I'm really looking forward to speaking with him. And he's from HWPL.
Yes. Yeah.
The peace organization. So he's based in South Korea, but he's originally from Zimbabwe. So that'll be interesting. And there's a few topics that I thought we could talk about today until my guest joins me. And by the way, if you've got a question or a comment from my guest, please phone in on 515-605-9325. And if you're outside of the United States, you need to put 001 in front of that. So it's 001-515-605-9325. And then if you would like to speak to me or to one of my guests, or my only guest, then press 1, and you'll be in the queue to speak to me or my guest, or both of us, or Naima, in fact. So yesterday was my birthday, and that's one of the reasons I've been running around like a blue-tailed fly for the past couple of days. But, you know, here I am. I'm a year older, and that's an interesting thing always. But tonight I'm going out with some mates after the show, so I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to the show. So some of the things I want to talk about, one thing I did not put in the show notes because it didn't occur to me, was what happened with this lady in London a couple of days ago. Ngozi, what's her name now? Ngozi Fulani. I don't know, did you hear about that?
No, is that the one that you were saying? Well, no, I didn't, to make a long story short. I didn't hear about
okay.
what happened.
Well, what happened was she was invited to reception at Buckingham Palace. And the reason why she was invited to this reception was that she is the head of a charity called Sister Space, which is about protecting women and girls from violence and helping women and girls to recover from violence. So this lady, Ngozi Fulani, was a guest at this reception. And there's an elderly white woman there who used to be a lady-in-waiting to the late queen. And she went up to Ngozi and started asking her, where are you from? And she kept asking her in different ways, where are you from? Where are your parents from?
Oh, I did hear about that. I did hear about that. And she she assumed that she was from Africa.
Somewhere else. Yeah, she couldn't be British. So the first time she asked her, Ngozi said, I'm British. I was born here. Now, most of the black people in this country are part of immigrant communities. So we're used to having these questions, right? We're used to, and we ask these questions of each other just out of curiosity or to make conversation. You know, where are you from? Where are your parents from? And so forth. But this lady kept asking and asking and asking over and over again. And then she said to them and goes, but where are you really from? Now, that was, you know, well out of order. That was well out of order. And that was racist. And she thought it was racist. I agree with her. It was racist. Then the next day I was watching this phone-in program, and Ngozi phoned in. And she said, well, I explained that I'm from the Caribbean. My parents were from the Caribbean, but I was born here, blah, blah, blah. But she said the first thing that the woman did when she came up to Ngozi was, because Ngozi has locks. She has these really big, intricate locks. The first thing this white woman did was she moved Ngozi's locks out of the way so she could read her name tag. Now, that is just really invasive, isn't it? It's invasive, it's intrusive, it's disrespectful. You don't just put your hand on somebody's hair and move their hair. But that's what
you know, that's one of those things, Jana. That's one of those things I think there are cultural differences because
mm-hmm.
my daughter, when she was in South Korea, she noticed a lot of things that elder would do, particularly where it would seem kind of rude, but they're in their culture, it's kind of like an older person does whatever they want. And
right. I agree with that.
Like,
but anyway, carry on.
Curiosity. And my daughter kept being asked, where are you from? And the assumption was,
you
must be from Africa because, you know, there are no black people in America. And my niece, who's in China, got the same thing. So I think some things may be just lack of knowledge. I don't think it's real intention to hurt people. But our guest is here, Brian Chitambira. And I think he may even present a whole different perspective as someone who's traveled globally, part of a global peace organization that brings people from all different cultures together.
Yeah, okay. Well, here we have to say that's excellent. Personally, I think that black people in greater numbers have been in this country since at least the 1950s. So, you know, I think there's no excuse for that now. I think in the past, you know, there might have been this bit of confusion about where you're from. But we're talking 21st century now, and I think, I personally think it's racist, but I'm very interested to talk to our guest. Brian, again, I'm going to really apologize if I mispronounce your name. Brian Chitambira, is that right?
That was correct, yes.
Oh, good. Excellent.
Right.
So welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Really
I'm really happy to have you on the show. So you're based in South Korea.
I'm actually based in Chicago in Illinois. But I work for the HWPR organization. So it's got a branch in Chicago, too. However, it is headquartered in South Korea.
Right, so your headquarters is in South Korea, but you're based in Chicago.
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, welcome to the show. So tell us a bit about HWPL. I've tried to have people from HWPL on the show before, but it didn't necessarily work out. And so I'm really happy that you're here, and I know that Naima has met people from HWPL, and she was very impressed by them. So I'm very interested to hear what you've got to say. So tell us a bit about the organization and how you got involved with it.
I think it might be easier for me to start from how I got involved with it and then what I learned about the organization as well.
Okay,
and so
cool.
I actually came across HWPL in 2019, so just before COVID broke out. They had a special Chicago branch, and so I participated in that. I was just a guest. I was just watching. And so
could I just ask how you found out about it?
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Oh, she said,
ask you, how did you first find out about HWPL?
I was actually just invited by a friend to come to one of the events.
Okay. And just remind us, what does HWPL stand for?
So HWPL stands for Heavenly Culture, World Peace, Restoration of Light.
Okay, because I don't know why. For some reason, I struggle to remember that, but my memory isn't great these days. But anyway, okay, thank you for that. So you went along to some of their events?
Sorry, please may you repeat the question?
Sure. Did you go along to some of their events? Is that how this started? Is that how your involvement started?
Yes, he went to one of their events. Yes, he was invited by a friend to one of their events.
Yeah, sure. Well, I got that bit. So are you having trouble with my accent?
No, I think it's actually more so just audio quality on my end.
Okay.
We've been working on that. We're going to try to figure out how to get a clear sound from the UK and from Jana.
So we're still working on it, but this is my phone, so it shouldn't be too bad, really. My phone's been charging all day, probably since last night. Anyway, never mind. So you went along to one of their events. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, he went to one of their events.
Yes.
Okay, so can you tell us a bit about that, please? You might have to translate.
Yeah.
Sorry, Naima, you might need to translate.
I actually remember the date because it was very memorable for me. It was December 19th.
Oh, yeah.
19. And so it was an event to there's the interfaith dialogues that HWPL hosts. And so it was actually my first time being even exposed to that. I never thought that such a thing even existed. And so I saw different religious leaders come together just to share about how they can be a trumpet of peace through the scriptures and through their religion. So that actually really, really moved my heart to see how everyone was able to agree and share the same message of being one, and everyone really uniting under the same message. And so I never really imagined that such a thing could take place. I always thought, like, the way I kind of grew up actually was very much, like, just associated with your religion. But seeing how all religions work together as one was something that completely changed my mind, and it really challenged everything that I had known. And so the first thing I said was, oh, this must be heaven, because everyone is one. And so ever since then, I want to be a part of this work. I remember speaking to one of the ushers and saying, I want to be a part of this work. And he just looked at me and he said, you are now.
So they welcomed you from the beginning.
Yeah, they welcomed him from the beginning, yes.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. That is wonderful. So what happened after that? What was your involvement after that?
So following that, I basically, I just attended the event online because, unfortunately, COVID broke out not too long after it. And so everything went online to Zoom. And so I stayed in touch. I was able to get the update to the interface dialogue meetings. They call them the WARP offices, for World Alliance of Religions Peace Dialogues. And so I kept joining them. And the more I joined them, the more I just wanted to get involved. And so I had the amazing opportunity to learn about the peace education. And so that's how I was able to receive, I received that education. And after being certified to be able to teach it, I was able to teach a few people that education and currently in line to plan for future education too. And I was also given the opportunity to actually speak as one of the panelists at the dialogue too. And so it was really just, most of that happened this year, actually. So for the last 2 years, from 2020, 2021, it was mostly just observing and joining as a guest, and then as an audience member. And then I was involved in just supporting any initiatives that were being done, too, whether it was to support what they call the DPCW, or even just making known the events that had taken place. I really enjoy that kind of work. And so when I was able to get more involved was when I was able to teach their peace education and then also being able to now participate as a panelist to be able to share how we can work together as one. So it's like a full circle. I saw different religions saying, let's be one, and then I wanted to be a part of that, and now I get to share the same message too. So, yeah, that was kind of my involvement following afterwards.
Excellent. Excellent. So what I would like to know, can you share with us, please, some of the strategies that you learned when you were getting your peace education?
So some of the strategies we learned in the peace education?
Yeah,
yes.
Some of the strategies. And one thing I want to say, Jana, I recently took the peace education course, and Ryan was my teacher.
Really? You didn't tell me that.
I am a certified teacher for peace education, and we'll be offering that as a course on our online school, New Earth Homeschool Academy. So we're looking forward to that, and it's a very thorough instruction, but I'll let him share some of the things that he learned as a strategy for teaching people how to live peacefully with each other.
Excellent.
All right, so, that's very true. It was very fun, actually, meeting and sharing the educational material. Of course, I think the blessing of teaching is that you also learn as you teach. And so
yes, that's right.
The strategy that comes through the peace education, it is actually just 12 lessons long. However, these 12 lessons, they're made to be as simple as possible with simple examples, but it can be made more advanced, detailed, even for college students so that they're able to study the same thing. So the purpose of peace education is actually to teach two main groups of people. I mean, ultimately the whole world, but through two main groups of people. First is the teachers, because they teach, right? So they already have access to the future generation. And the real target is actually the future generation, the children and the youth, because they're actually the ones who will be the heroes of the future. So education is set in place for that. And what it actually focuses on is ultimately changing the way we think, because the actions we do are...
To give us an example of how one would do that.
Yes, to give us an example.
Of how we change how people think.
Yes, how we change how...
Oh, okay. Well, so there's a very simple principle that I learned very recently. So this was before, this was actually after teaching Sister Naima here peace education, but It's simply that obedience follows perception. And so what we want is for people to be obedient to the culture of peace or to the heart of peace. And so what is necessary then is to help them perceive the ways in which this peace can be maintained and achieved. So through the materials, we look at, first we look at the original state of creation. And the purpose of looking at the original state of creation is to see how the whole world was already made to be harmonious together. Like everything was actually made to look for each other. And through examining that and bringing a greater appreciation of nature itself, we can then see ourselves as people who are also part of nature, and we'll see where we deviated from this and what we can do to turn back. So the principles are actually very simple. It's learning things like being kind, forgiveness, respect, appreciating your heritage or culture. Those kinds of things are actually the topics we go over. However, those lessons only hit hard because you see how a lack of those things is why we deviated from the original state of creation, which actually lives in harmony to ensure its own survival. And so
what did you say are some of the principles? I know you said one is respect.
Say that again, Jana.
One of the principles he mentioned was respect.
Yes.
What are a few of the other principles?
Said one of the principles that you mentioned was respect. What were some of the other principles?
Oh, so kindness, forgiveness. There is when you talk about respect, it's primarily, or there's also respecting the your cultural heritage and other people's heritage.
Right, which is so important. So tell me something. Give me an example of kindness, because I think sometimes different people mean different things. For me, as a Buddhist, kindness is the first ethical precept that the Buddha gave us. So all the other precepts that the Buddha gave us are based on kindness, right? How would you explain kindness or teach someone to be kind?
Right, so very good question. Very perceptive question. Right, so how kindness is actually taught, well, kindness is something that one is able to easily exercise if they understand the value of everything around them. So in actually lesson number two or three, there's three main things we look at. Lesson number two looks at the individual, where we look at my value, my role, and my duty. And through understanding the value of one person's life, one person's role, and the value of each person fulfilling their own duty, we're able to see the necessity of actually valuing each individual. And so with that understanding from that lesson, because kindness is actually lesson number five, which is the first lesson when you start to look at the individuals. When you're able to understand those things and see that simply being rude, simply not respecting the diversity, that is to say the differences of the people around us and the like, simply not acknowledging their value and not acknowledging their role, those small things are the reason why we end up actually having conflict and end up actually having situations where people end up being disrespected. So kindness is people to be
loving. So give an example of an act of kindness.
Sorry, what was that?
I'm looking for concrete examples.
Concrete examples? You know, and I guess when I think about it, like if someone is rude, what do you do to change that behavior? Say if someone snaps at people and you're trying to get them to be kind. So, Ryan, maybe you can tell us what are some of the ways to help someone be kind that has been not kind? Because I know Jana does nonviolent communication with you know, verbal skills, but I'm wondering how this peace education corrects somebody's behavior that's not kind.
Okay, I understand now. So concerning that approach, so with someone who is constantly snapping, the first thing that is actually necessary is to see the results of that, because it's not just one person that they affect, right? they affect many people if they're constantly, for example, constantly being angry and the like. So when we're able to see those effects on everyone else, then the most important effect one has to see is the effect on themselves. So the peace education focuses a lot, especially on self-reflection, right? And so by evaluating how that attitude, that anger, how it actually is affecting them, limiting them, and inhibiting them from actually having the freedom that they want. Because what everyone wants is actually, like, everyone wants peace, right? No one doesn't want peace, right? But even if someone accepts it or they don't accept it, everyone wants peace to start off within themselves. So when one is able to see why their current actions are actually resulting in a lack of that peace within themselves and how one's own actions are causing a butterfly effect in their society and their immediate surroundings, through observing those things, and most importantly is perceiving those things, then the message of peace can be applied. So then a practical thing can be supplied to them. And this is where there's activities that come with each education. So depending on the person, you can make an activity that can help them change their behavior. So it starts small, right? Charity begins at home.
Right.
Usually the first activity is actually to do with the people around you. So if someone is snapping, it's simple. Just for each day or week of the week, right, do one kind thing for your brother or for your mother.
Okay.
And observe, and this is the key thing, is observe how they react. Observe how it makes them feel.
Right.
And seeing how that interpersonal connection, how it actually benefits someone to be kind, that's that perception that you want. So when someone perceives that, then they're able to realize, oh, this is actually something I should do more of. But, of course, the hope is to continually practice. So the peace education itself is a course, but really the education is a lifetime, right? We're eternal students. And so the hope is that we're able to bring these people more and more and continually check in on them and continually apply those principles.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, Brian, which
before
are going
to be
a bit challenging, but let me just see what you think, okay?
We need to take a break.
Break. I'm going to ask you a couple questions. I hope that's okay.
Yes.
So thank you so much.
So now you get a quiz to see how well you know peace education. But, you know, the great thing about this course, Jeanne, it really does make you reflect a lot on yourself and what you do.
Which is where it has to start, I think. Transformation has to start with self. It can't
start
with transforming somebody else. We have to start with ourselves. That's
absolutely
what I think, anyway.
Absolutely. But we'll be right back after this quick break, so we ask you to stick and stay. Don't stray away.
Cats are higher than ever.
And we'll be right back. Let's share this screen with our viewing audience. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 when you're ready to speak. And if you're watching us live on Facebook, feel free to write in your comments. We've got a few comments from some viewers that I'll share after the break. So
excellent. Stick
and stay. Don't stray away. We will be right back after these messages.
Taxes are higher than ever. Every day, thousands of our residents leave Chicago to shop in Indiana. Jobs are being lost, and businesses are relocating. Let's find a way to lower our taxes to encourage residents to continue living and shopping in our city. Let's rebuild. Let's restore Chicago. Vote for me, for mayor of the city of Chicago, and I will work hard to find solutions that matter. I'm Dr. Willa Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willow.
Our kids know the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willow Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
Crime in Chicago continues to increase. Communities and politicians must come together to make a change. No one person can solve these problems by themselves, but I believe together we can make progress. Let's provide job training, economic growth, and invest into our 77 communities. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
Hello? Hi, are you back?
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Okay, and now we are back.
Excellent. Welcome back, everybody. If you've got a question or a comment for my guest, this is Jana, by the way, from Success Strategies, and we're part of the, gosh, remind me what we're part of. I just drew a blank.
Yes,
we are
part of
the Female Solution Global Radio and TV Network. And I don't know, I've been doing it a lot lately.
Remarks, Jana, we got a couple of remarks on our Facebook page. And Zelda Robinson, our Monday morning mindfulness host, says, "Grand rising, beautiful people. Looking forward to great international show. Jana and her guests are always sharing timely information. Thanks for a great topic." And Viada, our Friday morning host, of course, health and well-being with Viada, says, "Greetings from sunny Florida." And she says, "Thanks for this global peace conversation." Yes, we are certainly pleased to be having that. Yes, so our Friday
host
is from Florida. We've got several hosts from around the country and around the world, as you see. So with Jana, of course, she said good evening because where she is, it's evening. What is it, 6 hours?
That's right. But where you are is not.
So she's calling us from the future.
Something. Okay, Brother Brian, I had a couple of questions I wanted to ask you because some of the things you said might be considered, a little bit controversial. And also, I've had some experiences with people when trying to talk to people about nonviolence. And I'm just wondering about your thoughts, really. I'm wondering about your thoughts because, for example, you said everybody wants peace. Now, I believe that's true on some level, but I don't believe that it's true on every level. There are people who don't want peace. Like, for example, President Putin does not appear through his actions to be interested in peace. That's my opinion. So how would you talk to someone who really isn't interested in what you might define as peace or what I might define as peace. Let me give another example, if you will. I've had loads and loads of arguments with people on both sides of the Atlantic about hitting children, whether or not we should hit our children. Now, to me, I think it's wrong. I think it's immoral. We don't actually use words like that in nonviolent communication, but that's my opinion for what it's worth. So I've had people tell me, I got into an argument with someone because I was saying that it was violence, and he was insisting that it's not violence. It's teaching. And I was saying you don't have to use violence to teach children, right? That's my opinion for what it's worth. And he was really upset. Just the way he was looking at me, he appeared to be very, very upset. He said, violence, that's a very strong term. I said, yes, it's a very strong thing to do. So he was not feeling me on that. And as I said, had loads of arguments with people on both sides of the Atlantic, with black people specifically, on both sides of the Atlantic about this. So what I might consider to be nonviolent, somebody else might not. Do you get what I'm saying? That's my opinion. That's my definition of violence, right? It doesn't. Not everybody's going to agree with that. You get what I'm saying?
Oh, yes. And you know, Donna, that's a conversation we have had a lot with people who are really strongly believing in corporal punishment. And
they will say,
well, I got spanked and I turned out okay. But they don't realize they really didn't turn out okay. They have a lot of issues
that's an opinion, right? It's an opinion that I share, but it's still an opinion, right? I've heard people say, didn't do me any harm. But how do you know? You would not be the same person if you hadn't received, you know, physical punishment.
Yes.
You'd be a different person. So how do you know that it didn't do you any harm? But, you know, people feel so adamant about this. People feel so heated about this. So I was just wondering, Brian, if you could tell me, how would you handle that situation?
So I just wanted to confirm, am I answering specifically about the children or about the example of...
Well, I guess there were two things, because, Jana, you mentioned some people, like you said, that don't want peace. And we've had this conversation about, you know, some people saying, oh, well, you have to have war because, you know, God says and God made war against people. I've heard that argument.
Oh, come on. Now that's ridiculous. I'm sorry. But it is. That's ridiculous. This is what I call blaming God for your own bad behavior. That's what I personally call it. Now, I'm a Buddhist. I don't believe in God because I'm a Buddhist. And there is no God in Buddhism. Some people have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with it. But whether you believe in God or not, this is my opinion again, you're still responsible for your own actions. So to me, that's blaming God for your own bad behavior. We have to have, I mean, please, come on. Come on now.
So that's one question, Brian. She was saying, how do you answer someone who doesn't want peace, who believes that the way you have to address something is through violence, through war, through control? And, I mean, because that question that she asked, you know, I'd probably have a follow-up question to that. People who believe that the policing system that we have right now and the criminal justice system, which believes that you must have force in order to make people behave. And that's a good question, Jana, because one thing that I mentioned several times, after I came back from Korea, you know, from attending my daughter who lived there and from attending some of the global peace conferences that HWPL had, the time I spent in Korea was so peaceful. I didn't hear, well, Ryan, you know, you live in Chicago, sirens all the time.
Like my neighborhood in South London. Yeah, it's not that different. Trust me. Not that different. Sirens all the time. It never used to be like this. I've been living here for 30 years. But this is what it's like now.
And I didn't know that there are places where people don't do that. And then I realized this is not normal. I've adjusted to what is abnormal, believing that it has to be that
That's
way.
That's right.
But my
daughter
told
right.
me
yeah,
was
we adapt.
Very
young. We're very adaptable. Yeah.
Yeah. So if nobody's carrying a gun and nobody needs a gun, then you don't have to have violence, but you have people who believe you must have violence in order to control people who are violent. And they don't realize that something created the violence that now that you have to control. So, again, Brian, you know, what? How would you answer people who believe the world can only exist with violence because of the violent people, and they don't want peace, they want to have the right to be violent? How do you...
That's right.
How do you
or
do them?
You believe that they actually do want peace, but they're just not aware of it yet?
All right, so... I'll answer from actually the first thing we have to understand is what is it that makes someone want to go to war, right?
Yeah.
And most of the time,
yeah, it's going to be different for different
most
people.
Of the time, it actually comes down to one word, which is greed, wanting what is
right.
not yours, wanting more than you already have.
Right.
And so that greed is what leads to a lack of respect, because I want what you have. Right, I'll get it at your expense.
Mm.
Right,
that's,
right.
That's what
yeah.
leads to people going into, in this case, even wars, right? And so we have to actually examine that and understand that that is the fundamental reason why peace was broken, right? Because people wanted more than they had. People wanted what
right.
they didn't have
right.
or what more than they already had, and were not satisfied with what they have. And so even when you think about situations like that, it's not something that obviously is easily fixed on an individual level, right?
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
The main challenge that we've seen, too, is that people have tried for peace, of course, and they've tried for peace through speaking to the leaders, but leaders are only leaders because of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the people are the ones who leaders should be serving. And so one thing that HWPL really does promote is civilian-led peace building. That is to say,
right,
peace
right.
is actually determined by the people. When I say everyone wants peace, of course there's those who don't, because there have been world wars, right? And there's many wars.
Yeah, exactly. And we have someone like President Putin,
yeah.
who, in my opinion, does not want peace. Right, and there are I believe there's many, many reasons for that. It's not just one reason. I do believe that greed is a factor, absolutely, but I don't think that's the only reason. Like some people believe that you have to be violent if you're a man, because that's what men do. That's what men do. If you're really a man, you'll be violent and you'll use force to get what you want. So, I mean, I think there's different reasons for different people. That's just an example. What do you think?
First, I don't think that the man's way to go about things is to be violent. Actually, that's the immature way to go about things. The mature way
well,
to go
yeah,
about things.
Yeah, but there's plenty of immature people out there in the world.
Yes, and
there's
for that
plenty
reason,
of immature people out there. Not everybody wants what's best for everybody. Some people do, or do you think that everybody does really, but some of us are just not aware of it yet?
So I do agree, right? There are those who don't want that. And for that reason, actually, there is that need for a change in culture. And that's what I believe Sanaima actually kind of touched on when she said that she realized, I've grown used to something that's abnormal. So when we examine the original state of everything, again, it was made to be in harmony together. But because of wanting more than we have or wanting what we didn't have, right, that actually led to a breaking the order. So when order is broken, conflict begins. And when conflict begins, that's what can lead to violence and wars and fighting and the like. And so actually, it's a matter of restoring things to the original state of order. Now, for those who do not want to abide by that, we actually see a massive limitation. For example, in the fact that wars continue to go on, but the UN was made actually for the sake of establishing peace. That's what it was made for. Yet wars have continued to go on. So it shows
that
there's actually a limitation or loopholes in the international law for peace itself. And so for that reason,
I wouldn't call it a loophole. I would just say some people are not sticking to the law. Some people are not observing the law. But I also don't have a lot of confidence in the United Nations personally. I'd rather have confidence in the individual. Because, again, I'll give you an example. Look what happened in Rwanda, right? The Rwandan genocide. The UN pulled out all the Europeans and left the Africans there to kill each other and didn't even tell anybody. Right? They didn't even tell anybody that genocide was happening in Rwanda. So do you remember how people actually found out about the genocide? People outside of Rwanda. You remember how have you ever seen that film Hotel Rwanda?
That's the first time I had heard about it because I didn't even know what was happening until that movie came out as well.
You see, but the United Nations is supposed to be keeping the peace. How can they be keeping the peace when they're colluding with murderers? Which is what happened at the time. I don't know if that's still happening now, but just saying. Because in Hotel Rwanda, it shows how this chap who worked in a hotel, you know, he was a particularly special person in terms of, you know, the way people are sometimes seen. He had everybody who was staying in the hotel, he was protecting people in the hotel guests. He had everybody fax or phone people they knew in Europe. And that's how the news came out, right? It wasn't because of the UN. It's because of individual initiative. So, I don't know. What are your thoughts? I just really, really want to get a handle on this if I can. How do you actually deal with these kind of difficulties? Because we're all going to face them. We're all going to face these difficulties. So we need strategies to overcome them. So I'd like to know your thoughts, please. I don't know if you heard all that.
Are you asking strategies on how to overcome things like, you know, genocidal sort of battles? Because I think what happened in Rwanda was...
No, what I'm asking about is how do we communicate with people
time.
Who don't necessarily want peace? That's what I'm asking.
People decided to be violent and they don't want peace, like the Hutus and the Tutsis situation where...
Yeah, that's an example. That's an extreme situation, but it happened, right? We all know it happened. So although it's an extreme situation, it happened. And there are many, you know, what they call microaggressions. Every day there are incidents, like what happened at Buckingham Palace the other day. So how do you deal with people who don't really want peace? I've had this conversation with somebody once, right? He was a cab driver. I'm always talking to cab drivers. And he was saying, you have to beat your children. I've heard this argument so many times. I'm not convinced by it. But anyway, he was saying, you have to beat your children. And I said to him, well, just imagine there was another way to do it. And he said, but there isn't. Right. So how do you deal with people who don't even want to entertain the possibility of peace?
So for people like that, in all honesty, it's probably not the best to spend our energy on them. Because, again, why are they able to even have such views? It's because the current, like, culture that we live in allows for those views to exist.
Yes, that's right.
And so the hope is to actually change that culture and establish a culture of peace. In a culture of peace, it becomes very blatantly abnormal to want to have violence. And that's what we're trying toward. And so we don't focus on those, like there are unfortunately those we can call like far gone situations. But we focus
on... Yeah, but I'm sorry, brother, they happen every day. Okay, this is why I'm asking this question. Because I really want to know what to do when we encounter someone with that kind of mentality. Because it happens every day.
You know, one thing I've observed, Jana, because things change over time and generations.
Yeah, that's right.
One of the reasons why we put in the advertisement for the book, The Female Solution, the fact that in 50 years, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults.
That's
many are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families, so they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Well, you think
that's
50 years
oh, yeah.
now, most of these people who are causing the problem will be dead. You know, and that's the wonderful thing about the way the Earth is. It's a constant recycling. So sometimes you just have to wait for people to die off because they're not going to get it.
I'll tell you what Marshall Rosenberg said. Marshall Rosenberg is the person who pretty much invented nonviolent communication. He said, because basically nonviolent communication is based on empathy, right? So it's not about saying that someone is wrong or someone is bad or someone's evil or anything like that. It's about empathy, and empathy is about listening. So he says, and he really wanted us to use NVC with world leaders to really bring about change. And personally, I haven't really seen a lot of that happening, but that's one of the things that really, really inspire me. It's the fact that we could really use NVC, nonviolent communication, to change the world. And I do believe the potential is there.
Yeah.
But he says... If you meet someone, like say, for example, you meet a gatekeeper, you're trying to get hold of someone, and you meet a gatekeeper, right, someone who's stopping you from getting hold of them, then you use NVC, you use empathy with the gatekeeper.
Like, I know you're trying to protect this person, you know, and I understand you want to do a good job, you know, that kind of thing, so that rather than, how come you let me talk to them, you know, but getting
yeah.
them to understand
yeah. you
it.
Say to them, basically, it's all about listening for feelings and needs. So you might say, like, I understand. No, you would ask a question. Is your priority protecting this person? Are you trying to protect this person from someone that wants to waste their time or someone who might be a threat to them or something? Depends on the circumstances, obviously. So that's Marshall's approach. And as I said, I'm tremendously inspired by that because I think that the potential is there to change any situation. If enough of us have enough of the skills, we can change any situation. So what are your thoughts about what I just said?
Can you change any situation with the right kind of conversation?
With the right skills. We can do anything. We can change it anyway. That's, I think, what the potential is. That's the potential there. But what are your thoughts? Brian, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I agree with that, actually. So, and this too is actually one of the key lessons in the peace education curriculum. It's
mm-hmm.
about consideration and being considerate and thankful for the benefit of other people as well. And so that's
right.
one of the things necessary. Of course, there's something you actually said that did stick with me because it's very central, which is the fact that we actually have to start with the individual. And so Mother Teresa is used a lot as an example in the peace education, but there's a quote where she says that I can't save everyone all at once. All I can do is focus on the one person in front of me and one person like that.
Yeah,
so when it comes
and
to
it has to start with self.
Usually people who are in a situation where, you know, they want violence and the like, that's an abnormal, like just to say it as it is, that's not supposed to be how things are, right? Violence isn't the answer. And so there's something that is simply put broken within them that has to be addressed. And so,
no,
and
I agree with that. Something is broken or wounded, I would say. But I think we're all wounded to a certain extent from living in this society.
Well, you know, I think that what people learn culturally and it starts in their own homes, I think that's the foundation.
Yes.
So the question you asked about people believing in corporal punishment, you have to hit your children, that's kind of at the foundation where people's belief that you must respond with force because that's how they were raised. So I think the biggest challenge is for people who have never seen peace to believe that it can exist.
I completely agree because, you see, we're walking around with these wounds inside of us. We all are. We've all been wounded, and then that plays out in the way that we treat ourselves, and then that plays out with the way we treat other people. So my question is always, what can we do about that? How can we change that?
Right. Well, we got to take another break. But when we come back, we're going to give Brian an opportunity to tell us how to save the world.
Excellent. Excellent. Nope. Looking forward to that.
No pressure. So we'll be right back after this quick break. And we want you all to stick and stay. Don't stray away. And if you have a question you'd like to ask or a comment you'd like to make or an experience that you have had that may have changed your perspective about how we can actually create not just global peace but internal peace, because that's where it starts, Give us a call, 515-905-9325, and press 1 so that your number lights up and we know you have something to say. We can open your mic, or you can join us live on Facebook. Just go to Facebook or YouTube and type in The Female Solution, and you'll see myself and this handsome young gentleman sitting beside me who is our guest today, Brian Chitambira. I got it.
Well done.
All right, well, we will be right back after this quick break, so stay with us.
Hi, I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. And in case you didn't notice the resemblance, we're also three sisters.
We're going to be coming to you every week, sharing our successes and our mistakes as we navigate our lives as moms, wives, sisters, daughters, and of course, black women in today's world.
We'll talk about it all. Race, politics, religion, economics, culture, and we'll take a look at everything from whether or not to use corporal punishment to how do you teach your children about sex. Look for our upcoming book, Growing Up Charles. It's a personal story about our lives growing up in Maple Park on Chicago's South Side. I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. Follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Three Black Moms.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
You're back.
We're back. Okay, one thing I need to tell you guys, my beautiful, beautiful listeners, is that when I had three black moms on the show, I had the most fun I've had in years. You really need to listen to the show. It is brilliant.
Ah.
I just wanted to, that little plug. Yeah, it was so much fun having you lot on my show.
Ah, yes, yes.
No, thank you so much.
And I'm really excited to be able to expose the listening audience, those who have not been aware of HWPL. This was when I went to, the first time I went to an international peace conference there in South Korea, I was amazed. It's like we were in a great big stadium, and there were people from all across the world, and then the performances that they had was so synchronized, the dance performances and everything and the speeches, just so inspiring. And I was looking around like, well, where are the American journalists covering this? Because it was myself, and I don't know if there was anybody else from the States, but everybody from all over the world, they had this big screen where they even piped in some people who were doing various ceremonies where they were at. And I was amazed that it seemed like the Western world, at least America, is just oblivious, that there's this whole global peace movement happening right now where people are making decisions. And then every time there's, because every month the HWPL, I know it's not just in Chicago, but really everywhere, holds peace dialogues with religious leaders to try to come to some commonality of beliefs, even though we all have different faiths, but having a common understanding that there is a common understanding. We're all, you know, part of one world, one universe, but being able to see that people are organizing and even on international level, where Chairman Manhee Lee has taken a document that was created by world leaders in law, coming up with a document that outlines some specific behaviors that should keep the peace. And it's called the DCPW, which stands for Declaration of Peace and Cessation of War. And basically, it's for leaders to agree on treating each other kindly. You know, something as simple as sharing your resources instead of trying to take people's stuff, you know.
I don't mean to sound cynical, I really don't, but I do think that it needs more than a declaration. I think the declaration is a good place to start. I think it's an excellent place to start. But that's not the end of the story, because we're working with human beings, right? We're working with our own tendencies. We're working with someone else's tendencies. And Brian has talked about greed, which we all have inside of us.
That's what I believe, anyway, as a Buddhist.
We all have greed inside of us. We all have hatred inside of us. That's what we have to work on in order to transform ourselves. So imagine you were in a country where there was a war, or there was a famine, or there was an invasion, or something's going on, and you can't get enough food to feed your children. What would you do? Right? That would be a very challenging situation. You might have principles of peace that are really important to you, but, you know, when the going gets tough, what are you going to do? What are you going to do if you can't feed your children?
And you know what? I have a question, and maybe Ryan knows a spot in the peace education, or maybe yourself even, but what I've observed is that what really is at the bottom of greed and everything else is fear. Fear that there's not enough, and fear that other people will not share. That's the fear. So if you fear that you're not going to be given access to what you need for your physical survival,
let alone your children's survival,
enemy who will not share with you, and then
you
will take from them by force. So
that's right.
I think the first step is getting rid of the belief that there's not enough. And the earth is so plentiful, there is food growing all around us, and because we don't know what's edible, because we're so disconnected from the earth, we can't even see it, and we do some things that actually pollutes the earth that feeds us for free. So I think there's a number of things that first thing, if we can just get rid of the thought that there's not enough, then instead of us thinking, how can I get my share and make them give it to me, or how can I disable them so they have to give it to me, first stop thinking there's not enough. And then stop creating systems that makes it not be enough. I mean,
yeah, I agree with that in principle.
No, we don't know
that
the farmers get paid to not grow a certain amount of food so that the prices can be maintained at a certain high level.
That's wrong.
You know, and I really believe that we're evolving to that point where we're going to evolve out of this monetary system and into a system of simple sharing, where everyone just works together and shares what they have. And there's a part in the peace education that looks at the animal kingdom,
right,
the insect kingdom even. I mean, all of these other species that simply work together. I mean, you don't see bees punching a clock, but everybody goes and works to make the honey, you know?
Animals fight each other for resources. Animals fight each other for... My cat, my little boy, is so lovely. Both of my cats are so lovely. And he really loves his sister. But there's times he attacks his sister because he doesn't want his sister to get more attention from me than she has, than he has, rather. It's really upsetting to me because he's such a sweetie. And he loves his sister. But it's instinct. We're talking about instinct here. I mean, that's the advantage that we have as humans, is that we can understand things. And at least potentially we can understand things that animals can't understand.
So I think behavior is learned.
How do you feel about what I just said? That's the correct question. How do you feel about what I just said?
That it's instinct. So, Brian, what are your feelings that people act out of instinct? And I don't know, are you saying that can't be unlearned or...
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying how. How can we do that? My question is always about how, right? Practical ways that we can do that. Because I do believe it's possible.
I guess her thought is, how do we help people get out of the natural instinctive behavior of responding with aggression at others? Because sometimes...
Yeah, we're talking mostly about animals, but it's true of human beings as well, isn't it? We have all these motives, which is why a lot of times I prefer animals to humans. We have all these ulterior motives, like, for example, I want to prove I'm a big man, right? I want to prove I'm important. If I invade the next country, that will prove how important I am. Not mentioning any names in particular, but you all know, everybody knows that's what happens sometimes. So what can we do?
All right, that's a very good question. All right,
Thank you.
I also have a question, but that is, who told them that that's the right thing to do, right?
They have that conditioning now. Some people have that conditioning now, unfortunately. What can we do to change that?
Right.
And so it's the same thing, right? So you can look at it like a seed. Right, a seed can be, we can look at it as this is what they were taught. That's the seed that they had. And when
you want
corrupt seed, you have to first pull out the weeds, the things that are actually draining life from the seed, and you have to completely uproot, tear down, and then you have to replant and rebuild. And so, of course, the question is, how can we do that, right?
Thank you. I'm really glad you said that, because I didn't have to ask the question.
For situations like that, I mean, that's the whole point, is one has to learn again, right? One has to learn again and be reconditioned to actually understand the correct principles. And so even like nature, that looks as if sometimes it may seem chaotic when you see a lion chasing its prey, but even that term predator and prey exists for a reason. Prey knows its prey. Because it runs away. So it knows its role in GCS.
Oh, that's true, actually. If you run from a lion, you're in big trouble. because it will immediately put a label on you, which is prey.
but you know, all of it, like you mentioned, you know, the balance in nature,
right.
Because we're all part of an ecosystem, everything eats the flesh of everything else. So
right.
even when we no longer use these bodies, I mean, there's a whole host of things in the ground that will get rid of this flesh, you know. So it's...
No, that's absolutely true, because my teacher, when he passed away, he was buried. We have a retreat center where we have a lot of activities for people in the order, and he was buried there. And I was really surprised, because for Buddhists, it's traditional to be cremated. And I was really surprised that he was buried in the ground. And so I asked one of my other teachers, who was a good friend of his, why is it that he was buried? Why was he not cremated? And he said it's because he wants his body to nourish the earth, right? To nourish all the plants and all the animals and everything in the earth. Now,
right.
Yeah, to me, I would have never thought of that, but, you know, I do find it very inspiring.
Yes, I think I think that is the balanced way to look at it, because we're all part of one system, and that's the whole point of the unity, and that's what I liked about the peace education. It was showing the unity of everything, and it's a cycle. We're all part of this cycle. If you saw the movie The Lion King, I mean, Mufasa broke it down real simple. You know, we become the grass, and they eat the grass. So it's all one circle of life. So
right.
I think, and I agree with Brian, that you have to retrain people to think differently. I think humans have been taught that you must fight for what you get. And when they see nature, rather than them seeing the balance, they see it as a conflict. But the animals are not at war. They're only striving to eat.
They're
keeping the balance of each species, because everybody eats somebody and everybody's eaten by somebody. So they're keeping a balance. It's only human beings. And studying this, there's only two species of animals on the whole planet that actually go to war in the sense of fighting over something that doesn't have anything to do with food. And that's chimpanzees and human beings. No one else does that.
Okay, that's really interesting. Although
no
I have
one,
to tell
yeah,
you truthfully, I've seen meerkats also, you know, band together and fight over territory, because animals will fight over territory because that's to do with survival, right? Having access to resources, that's what it's all about. But to me, that's a deeply ingrained habit, and as human beings, most of us have that habit. Okay, so what can we do about it? Anyway, you knew I was going to ask that question, right? Because I keep asking the question. But, yeah, I think you're right. There is a balance in nature, but nature can also be very, very cruel.
Well, it can get out of balance, and one thing that we've seen is things like floods and fires, but that's when the earth has a cleansing of itself, because we've done things to pollute it. It has to, like, wash it away.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, when you're dirty, you got to go
nature's
and take...
Yeah, trying to restore the balance, absolutely.
You know,
yeah, I agree with that, absolutely.
But now, this is a thought that I have, and maybe, you know, some of our callers want to... call in, or if you're watching us on Facebook, you know, give us your comments. Because, you know, we've been, Brian, we've been working on a course, and just that, and also be 12-lesson course called Parenting with Peace. And knowing that some people are, you know, we're going to prepare to be teaching the Peace Education course, I see it as a prerequisite to the peace education, because a person has to first understand what's inside of them that has made them not be peaceful. The things that they learn, like the conditions
that
we have, the belief that people are born bad and need to be beaten, have the devil beat out of them, whatever thing you use, the reason why you're beating that 2-year-old who says no, you know, whatever wrong thought that you have about yourself and others, that has to be corrected at the core. And I believe that if you teach every human being that they are equally an expression of the divine creator, and there is
or hierarchy, something similar, right. Higher learning, higher energies.
None of that. If you teach every child that they are of equal value and importance and magnificence and all of that, and if you teach them that the only reason why people act other than that is because they just don't know any better, and they have an opportunity to demonstrate what a being looks like who is aware of their identity as part of the one creative energy and life force that we call God, if you teach a child that, then they will be open to hearing the lessons of peace, and the parents will be able to teach those lessons because they will correct the things inside of them. So the parenting with peace course that we're teaching is a whole different mindset for the
next. It's a
whole different
way of living, really, isn't it? And relating.
Coming in, need to be taught something different. Anybody giving birth right now, anybody of childbearing age right now, you have to be teaching your children something totally different than what the world has been conditioning them toward.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. And there are people in the world who are working for peace. But not everybody in the world is working for peace, and that's the problem. We need to learn from the people who are, and we need to learn that it's possible. It's not that we can't be peaceful. It's not that we have to be children. That's a choice. It's not a requirement. You get
well,
me?
You know, what I would say, Jana, is that if you choose to beat your child, like Brian was saying, you plant seeds. You're planting
the violence
child. And you have to know that everything you plant in a child will grow and flourish. So if you plant
children who are exposed to violence in the home are more likely to get involved with violence outside the home.
Yes. So I believe you can teach a child to handle violence outside the home if it's not happening in their home. But if it's in their home,
you have to learn. We can learn the skills. When we learn communication skills, we can prevent violence.
I believe
that. We can prevent
violence
from happening in the first place, which to me is the main. I mean, with NVC, with nonviolent communication, we can use it in situations of extreme violence, and it's been used in situations of extreme violence. But to me, I think the main thing with nonviolent communication is prevention. It's about prevention. And I find it really interesting what you're saying about teaching the children, because Marshall Rosenberg was working with groups of people in Israel and Palestine, and he wasn't getting anywhere. Their views were so deeply entrenched that he wasn't getting anywhere. So you know what he did? He started working with the children. He said, I have to work with the children. He's working towards the future because he wasn't going to change the adult's state of mind.
Right. Actually,
what we learn before the age of five is what we keep, what stays with us. Sorry, Brian. What were you going to say?
I was just going to agree and say that's actually the heart of it too, right? So I like a few things you mentioned. You mentioned that we should actually start off by learning from those who are working for peace. And really, that's the vision behind, like, HWPL, right? HWPL, Chairman Lee Manhi, he's always emphasizing, and he really loves children, but he always emphasizes the importance of actually being recreated. And so the hope is that we focus on those youth. That's the hope, is that ultimately everything we're doing is to set and place systems to, one, prevent wars from ongoing through the DPCW that was mentioned by Sister Naima, and two, to create a culture of peace where peace becomes the commonplace thing, and that happens through peace education. And so that's the step one, is to actually teach the teachers to teach it. So you're an example of this, right, with the course that you're making. That's an example of this. Teach the parents or the first teachers. Teach the teachers in school who are the lifelong teachers, right? And then those children will be recreated with a whole different mindset.
Right, and sometimes we teach through our actions. Right, it's not just through our words, it's through our actions that we teach.
Right. One person teaches a whole class, and that class becomes a class of teachers, and they teach their own class. So what we see is that same seed effect, right? That seed was planted,
right.
And multiple fruit
fruits were born, and those fruits have seed inside of them too, right? The same seed. And they plant again, and more and more and more.
Right.
And so it's not something that would change in a moment, but it is something that with time, the results will be very, very different.
Right.
And when
that's really interesting.
What you leave behind, whether you like it or you don't, actually. That's one of the definitions of culture that I heard that really stuck with me, that it's what you leave behind, whether you like it or you don't.
Okay,
so
that's really, really interesting. That's a really interesting definition.
Generation. You want to leave a world of war, or do you want to leave an inheritance of peace? And the hope is you can create peace and make it a lasting legacy for future generations. That's actually the hope. And so, you know, it's an ongoing process, but with people like you, people like Naima, and the people listening too, because if you're joining a nonviolent communications talk, then I'm certain that you're someone who actually wants peace too. It all starts with us. And if first the person becomes a citizen, what we realize is a nation's culture is made by the citizens, and the citizens are also influenced by that culture, right? It's kind of that situation of like society and the individual. So we start with the individual. The individuals change, the culture changes. The culture changes, then the individuals who are created from that culture just multiply and continue to multiply.
That is
so
okay, but
is
what happens
if you have a
oppressive government like in China, where the culture is actually being made by the government? It's a top-down system of government.
Yeah, but you know, studying the history of China, you know, there was the Opium Wars when Britain was, and this is an example of people believing that the only way you get rid of something is through force, when
much
of the population was addicted to opium, and they were trying to force the people to get off of drugs and, you know, get back to normalcy. Some people didn't want to let go of the drugs, and it got very violent in terms of sometimes killing people who were drug addicts. Now, I think there's a better way to handle people who were addicted to drugs, but China became, in order for it to get back control of the population and get people functioning, they were very brutal in wiping out the opium addiction. So it's still.
Oh, yeah, but I think we do the same thing in the West. You know, we may not be as brutal, but we're throwing people into prison for what is essentially an illness, because addiction is an illness.
Illness, right. And so those are, again, you know, how do you teach people a better way of handling something other than using violence and force? We got a call on the line, Jana. I'd like to open the mic for Eric. 3964, please introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your thoughts about global peace and nonviolence and all of these important topics today.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you.
Oh, hello. Hello. My name is Dahlia, and I'm so excited to hear about this topic. I'm actually a teacher and a mother, and I'm so excited to be hearing that there's more being discussed about peace. Truly, it's such an amazing work to see that HWPL is actually doing so much, not just as parents, right, so we have to work at it, and teachers, but I think it's fascinating to see something that's happening globally, and I'm so thankful for that. I think that many times we, you know, as a mom, I'm trying to teach peace in my own house, but if there's, you know, nothing else that's supporting it, it's kind of difficult, and as a teacher as well. So I just wanted to thank Brian and HWPL for the work that they are doing. And I think one thing that I, you know, it keeps coming to my mind that if we are able to work together in unity, right, and focusing, and I wanted to hear a little bit more about the articles and that are in this document, what is happening, and you know, I would love to see how this work is happening globally, and I think that is something that is really making me have hope. So I just wanted to say that, and I thank Brian for being there today. Thank you for this wonderful opportunity to speak as well, and for this wonderful show.
Sorry, what did you say, Amanda?
And Dahlia, where are you from?
Oh, Chicago. Dahlia, yeah. Where are you based?
Chicago, yes.
Okay. So, Dahlia, what ages of children do you teach?
So I teach from kindergarten to eighth grade.
Oh wow, that's a huge range of ages that you teach. And how old are your own children?
So my son, Leonardo, he's 16, and my daughter is 24.
Okay, so they're grown, basically. They're grown or nearly grown,
yes.
But you're still teaching them because teaching is a lifetime job if you're a parent, right?
Definitely.
So, Dalia,
okay, so I think that question was directed to you, Brian, about the article.
Yes, Dalia, I have one more question for you, Dalia. When you have conflicts in the classroom, how do you handle it with your students? Is there a method that the school suggests, or do you use your own methods? How do you handle it when students are, you know, aggressive and fighting each other or about to fight each other?
That's an excellent question.
That is actually an excellent question, and because I'm like an exploratory specials class, so I teach like engineering, that's something that is why I'm so grateful that there's something that can be established even like as a society. That's something we can all be teaching because there's so many resources and everyone has their own. So it's almost something where if there is something that we can all use globally in unity, right, then we would all have the same set of ideas and the mindset. So there's so many resources out there. There's different, like, peace curriculum in restorative education and different, like, methods of calming strategies and, you know, things like that. But in reality, everyone's doing their own thing, and I think that's where this peace curriculum would be so amazing to even be brought to the schools, because if we are teaching the same thing and we all have the same ideas, then I think that would even be helpful to communities and even to countries, right? If we're all able to teach something in unity, that would be something that would definitely be hopeful for all of us.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thank you, Dalia.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you so much. I believe that was a question about the articles and the DPCW about what it is. So the DPCW, like mentioned, it stands for the Declaration of World Peace, right, and the Cessation of War. So it's a document made out of 10 articles and 38 clauses. And these 10 articles and 38 clauses actually serve the purpose to gradually, and again, because as much as I'd love for peace just to be solved in like a click of a finger, it is something that would take time. So the DPCW gradually limits the opportunities and the situations in which war is allowed to take place. So I mentioned earlier about the UN, right? And there's an international law for peace that has been created. However, the reality is there is loopholes because wars continue to happen. And so the DPCW was made as a direct answer to those loopholes to ultimately reduce the amount of wars that would take place, as well as to create a law for peace. So it's got 10 articles, and like I can share some of the examples. Like one of the articles is called War Potential. And so War Potential is actually an article that it ultimately limits threats being made. So one thing that we need to do as people is to actually call out when evil is happening, right? So Article 2 about war potentials, for example, disarmament, I don't know how to say the word.
Disarmament.
But there we go. All right. And repurposing our weapons to actually benefit society. So an example of this was actually in the Philippines, where there was a 40-year-long conflict that took place. And so what they is they actually applied this principle, and they literally took their guns, mounted them, and created them to be plowshares. Right?
Wow.
So when you think about a weapon, for example, a weapon is made, it's not made to protect, which is what people think it is. Like, I need a gun
to
protect myself.
That's right.
A gun attacks. If you want something to protect yourself, get a shield. Right?
Okay,
actually,
that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yep,
because
you know,
I've heard the argument. We have to have a standing army in order to protect us. And in a way, there is a logic to that because someone is going to attack us, right? But nobody attacks Switzerland. Switzerland has an army, but it doesn't attack other countries, and nobody attacks Switzerland. So maybe if we had a different foreign policy that didn't involve attacking and being attacked, we would not. We might still have an army, but we wouldn't be, get involved in any wars. When was the last time Switzerland was involved in a war? Does anybody even remember?
Right.
Because I don't know.
Right. They don't attack, and so they don't get attacked. Now, I don't know if it's because
they don't have a mentality of we have to attack or we might have to attack, right? That's not the mentality. So, yes, they have an army, but they don't attack anyone. They don't get attacked.
Right. And that is a good point, right? So that's actually a good step forward, is not attack when you have a weapon. But
better
than that is to not even be in a situation where you feel the need to have weapons. And this
yes,
is something
absolutely, absolutely. But the mentality is other people have weapons, therefore we need them. And I do think that there's a logic to that, but I also think that's what feeds the military-industrial complex, right? It's all about money. It's all about greed, which is what you started off by saying, Brian. It's all about greed, right? Because
right.
The arms industry is so powerful. And it's so lucrative. I'm talking specifically about the United States now, but I'm sure it's the same way in other countries as well. The arms industry is so powerful and so lucrative. They don't want to give up their arms. It's too much money for them to give up. But if there was, you know, no need for all these weapons, yes, that industry would die, and that would be a good thing.
Yeah, well, I think one of the solutions is to repurpose what we're using the weapons for, because you're right, the weapons manufacturers, they make money anytime somebody's in conflict. So when we don't have a war abroad, they want to keep violence going on at
home.
That's
right, that's right. So there's always either violence or the threat of violence, right?
Yes.
There's always either war or the threat of war. And they can use that as a justification, and then they keep making money.
So if you can show manufacturers how they can create like farm equipment or you know computers or something out of the same metal, I mean, yeah, it would take a lot, but people could be producing something that's for the peacetime, and they could believe
yes.
that it could sustain them. Again, I think that all
yes.
acts of aggression come out of fear. So if you fear that you're not going to be able to earn a living and you're not going to be able to feed your family and you're not going to be able to produce the wealth that you want and all of that, and so, pardon me, so out of fear, you don't want to think of another way to use your manufacturing capabilities, then you'll keep trying to convince people that they must have weapons because you want to
keep
getting paid.
That's right, and you will succeed at convincing some people that we must
right.
have weapons. So we've identified greed as one of the sources of conflict. We've identified fear of scarcity, as fear of being attacked, as two more sources of conflict. And then there's this thing. Let me tell you a story. This is a true story, right? This happened, I think, in 1968. You've heard about the Pentagon Papers?
Yes.
The Pentagon Papers. Well, I heard about this first, and then I saw the film The Post, which is about when the Washington Post got hold of the Pentagon Papers, which were originally published in the New York Times. The New York Times had a ban slapped on them that they weren't allowed to publish any more of this material because it was highly sensitive documents. And then the same thing happened with the New York Times. And they went to court and they won, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. But the Pentagon Papers showed... and there was a documentary about the Vietnam War, which I watched. It was, I think, 12 different episodes or something, which I watched before I saw The Post. What happened was I think it was 1965. The war had been going on for a few years. The president, I think it was LBJ, Lyndon Johnson, and his advisors sat in a room and discussed what to do because they realized they could never win. They realized they could never win in Vietnam. Do you know what they decided? They could either end the war then or they could carry on sending troops over to Vietnam. And they sat in a room and they decided to carry on sending other people's children to Vietnam to kill other people and other people's children in Vietnam, to be killed themselves, to come back missing a limb or being gassed, right? All of that was in the Pentagon Papers. They actually sat in a room. They had a choice. They had a choice. They could have ended the war then, and you know why they decided not to? Because they wanted to save face, because it would look bad if they ended the war then. It would look bad. So that's why the war went on for another 6 years after that. True story.
So, you know,
true story.
We can take history and learn from it, and that's one of the things, even with the peace education class. If you look at what people did, like there's one story about the guy who ended up, because he wouldn't listen to the captain, ends up getting killed on the boat.
You really like that story, huh?
Yeah, that stuck with me, you know, but I think you can take every
mistake
and learn and teach children something. See, this is what we did. This is who it hurt.
Right, so learn from this. Don't make the same mistake.
Right,
so where was
right.
this? Tell me, what boat was this? Where was this?
This was one of the lessons in the peace education class that Brian conducted that I took.
But where did it happen and what was the boat?
That's World War II, right? I think it was a World War II.
So I can share the story now.
Yeah, please.
I put it up in front of me, but it was near the border of France and Italy. There was an area named Modane, and it was actually the 12th of December in 1917. During the First World War, 1,000 French soldiers were on a train heading back home to leave and spend their time with their families for Christmas, right? So the train was packed with soldiers, and passengers shouted out in excitement when the engine started right away. But the engine driver refused to start the train, and he refused to move the train, and he warned the people that the hill that they're going to go down is very steep and has a very sharp curve just following afterwards. So the heavy load of the train would actually cause it to topple over and have a grave accident. So this is the conductor. And so actually this is lesson number three about what broke peace in society. And this is where we actually touch on greed. So one thing I have to realize here is that there is an order that's actually set in place. This is an army, and this is a train conductor. So if you look at it like occupational-wise, there's a difference, right? But one of the officers from the army, he went to the conductor and actually pointed his gun at him and said, "If you start this train immediately, or I will fire the gun." And the officer, the soldier, he was offended because he thought that the engine driver was being disrespectful to the troops who had fought so hard for their country, and he was left with no choice. So he started the engine, and they went. And soon after the train met the steep hill that the conductor was speaking about, the train rushed down faster than usual, got to the steep curve, and it toppled over, and the accident killed almost about 670 soldiers. But you can imagine,
right?
So this is a situation where you've just been fighting a war, and you survived, which is like such a huge blessing to still be alive.
Mm-hmm.
And even go home for Christmas with your family. And then your cause of death is a train crash that was caused because your officer, your commanding officer, did not want to listen to the person who was actually in charge. So the order here...
You see, I mean, there's
army,
so much squandering of lives in the First World War.
But actually, in a train situation, the person who's in charge is actually the conductor.
Yeah.
And so that's breaking that order, which is what happened here. Breaking that order and disrespecting the person's role and duty.
Right, and not thinking for yourself, just behaving blindly, and you know, not making important rational decisions that make sense.
The one who had to drive the train was forced. But then also you look at, and now I look at what happens, even people who don't want to go to war, which was now in Vietnam, it was a really big change in the society because it was
it
like
really was. It really was. Because there were people who were serving in the armed forces who were in the States on leave, and they were going on anti-war demonstrations themselves.
Yes,
even
yes.
though they were actually still on active duty.
Yes, because a lot of people don't want to go to war. A lot of people do want peace, but if you're threatened, and that's what's happening, I'm understanding, what's happening even with the war with Russia and Ukraine. A lot of these Russian
right.
soldiers do not
that's
want to go
right.
to war. They don't want to be out here killing Ukrainians. But if
that's
you
right.
get
and Putin is lying to them, and
to
his
jail.
Own advisors are lying to him. So the war goes on. But let's tell another story. You know the story about the Christmas peace that happened during the First World War?
Oh yeah, when all the both sides got together. Yeah, you told that story too, Brian, in the story where the two sides got together and sung Christmas carols together in the middle
yeah,
of the war.
Yeah, they came out of their trenches. Like these people have been shooting at each other for months
yeah.
and killing each other for months. When it was Christmas, they came out of their trenches. They exchanged gifts with each other. Somebody sent me some brandy, so would you like some? That's what it was like. They laid down their arms. The war would have been over if they hadn't picked up their arms again. The war
but
would
again,
have ended
the commanding
then and there.
The commanders made them. I think people at the top.
That's right.
Made
right.
them go back to fighting.
That's right. But, you know, when you think about it, I mean, it's a terrible thing to say, but they couldn't kill everybody.
Well, that's
you know,
the
if
challenge.
If everybody had refused to fight, that would have been the end of the war because they couldn't kill everybody.
Yeah. But see, that's the thing. You have to have the courage to believe that if you stand up for what's right, you will win. And that's really where we're at now as a global family. Most people actually do want peace, and the people who are claiming that we have to go to war, those are the ones that are either afraid or conditioned. But most people do not
well,
want.
Yeah, I think everybody's conditioned.
War.
Because, you know, the same people, okay, they might not want to go to war, but then those same people are saying we have to be our children. Some of them are saying that. So I believe it starts with the individual and it starts within the family. If we want to stop violence out there, we have to start by ending violence in here, in the home, and in the family.
I agree. Now, in this edition of On Air Magazine that we published and actually distributed at one of the big peace events that HWPL, for those who are watching us on Facebook, I'm holding up the edition with Chairman Manhee Lee on the cover, and we actually printed the 10 articles from the DCPW.
Okay.
And, of course, you know, one of the things that we wanted people to do is to know that it exists and that state strains you enough is one of the nations that is kind of stalling about ratifying it. So that lets us know who really is the problem here. You know, this nation is one of the biggest arms dealers in the world.
That's
so
true.
Who really is keeping things going? And if it's for profit, then all we have to do is help people understand that they're being used for someone else's profit. And they can choose.
Well, again, good luck with that. Because you see, the thing is, the Vietnam War ended eventually. We left Vietnam. We pulled out. You know, before that, there was huge protests all over the country, as you know. And I'm talking about the United States. There were people who were on active service who were actually protesting against the war. There was another group called Vietnam Veterans Against the War. So this was huge. But yet, since then, we've had two Gulf Wars, right? The wars have continued, even though, you know, basically what I'm trying to say is we haven't learned our lessons, okay? That's what I'm saying. We've not learned our lessons.
Yes, and I think there's a couple of the articles in the DCPW that speaks to not forcing people to participate in war. And
yeah, that's right. We can't force people to.
Not invading another
being violent,
territory.
Unfortunately, I wish we could, but we can't. And that would be disrespectful. If we were trying to force someone to be nonviolent, put down their arms and stop fighting, that would be disrespectful. We have to do it a different way.
We have to change what we consider as values. If you tell somebody they're being brave if they go and kill some people, that's confusing. And if you raise a child, and you mentioned earlier, Jeanne, about the aggression of men. Well, you know, if a boy child is raised with the thought that if you beat up somebody or you overpower somebody, that's something that is to be applauded and rewarded, then how do you get the message to a child raised that way that peace is better?
That's right. Which is the exact same thing Marshall Rosenberg said, who invented MVC. Well, what he said was that all the TV shows and all the films that we watch show violence as a good thing, right? When you conquer your enemy, then you've won, and that's a good thing. And so that conditioning starts very early.
With the language, even. So So, Brian, I have a question, and I know that, Jeanne, you all, with nonviolent communication, deal a lot with words that are used. But, Brian,
It deals with words, yes, but it deals more with listening than talking.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Carry on.
Right, you're listening to what the person is actually saying, and what feeling are they expressing? But
yeah,
Brian,
feelings
what are
and
some
needs, exactly? That's what MVC is about, connecting with feelings and needs. So it's more about which is how we define empathy. So empathy is more about listening than talking.
So then, if you have a situation where someone says, "We need oil for our machinery." And you all have oil growing under your ground, and we want it. How do you use language that doesn't sound like, if you don't give it to us, we're going to come and take it, because that's what's happening. That's why we keep going these wars. And how do we say things like, well, we can share what we have, but we also want to be adequately compensated for it? Because this is a conflict that's happening, and a lot of people are being deceived with all these other, you know, flowery concepts. Oh, we're fighting for democracy. Oh, we're fighting for liberation. No, you're fighting because you want to take these people's oil, or you want to take these people's
crops,
you can make drugs, you can sell. I mean, you know, we've been lied to. But if we can be truthful and share the resources that everybody needs, is there a way that could be done? And Brian, maybe you can address how that may be addressed in the DCPW, how we can share and trade and exchange peacefully and recognize when someone needs something that perhaps we could help them get it, as opposed to saying, no, we're not going to share, and so then they raise an army, they come in and kill people so they can take it, or you know, we can decide how to help people who may not have the means to purchase something, but they still need it, like food, if somebody's going through a drought or something. I mean, are there ways that the DCPW deals with global interaction on a peaceful level so people are not taking from each other violently?
Yes, so all the 10 articles, actually, you could almost even call them 10 steps, really, because they all feed into the next thing. But one of the ones that really focuses on friendly relations is Article Number 3. So Article Number 3 is actually friendly relations and the prohibition of acts of aggression. And so just summarize, because, you know, with anything to do with laws, there's pages upon pages of things to look at. But basically it says that states should become agents of peace and take measures to strengthen global peace based on respect for the principle of equal rights and self-determination of peoples. States should prohibit acts of aggression and should not allow their territories to engage in armed force. So ultimately, a state should develop friendly relations with other states and prevent disputes. And so the question, as I'm guessing is Anna's favorite question, is how, right?
Wow.
How do you do that?
It's always the question, yeah.
It's very simple, but it's so simple that it's almost like underwhelming to think about it, but the effect is amazing, and that's just dialogue, right?
Talk,
dialogue.
Yeah. How can
and
we
so
help
the,
you?
The problem with force is that it disregards what people say. So the reality of people, and we can see this on individuals,
someone once said to me, how do you speak to someone who's stubborn about the truth? You know, this is the truth. This is undeniable. Like, you say 1 plus 1 is 2, and they say 1 plus 1 is 16. You can't change my mind. He said, the way that I find respect for them is to realize that they must have something that they are better at me than. In other words, they have something that I also like, something that I like, and they have an abundance. And so that's the reality of even nations. There's no one nation that is sustaining itself right now, right? Because there's trade. Trade happens because there's that need.
Right.
So instead of focusing and just applying article number three, instead of focusing on give me or else, it should be, hey, I notice your country is lacking this. We have that, right? So what if we give you this and you supply this to us too? And so what's actually the most fundamental thing is respect, because if one doesn't respect the answer, then that's going to lead to conflict.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is when it comes to these kinds of situations, like, I do agree very much the words do matter. And even Chairman Lee, he emphasizes, oh, your words really are important. They actually show you what's in someone's heart.
Yeah.
And so I'm saying give us or else is not a person coming actually with the heart of peace at all,
right?
They come in with a heart of entitlement.
Right.
And we can already see that that entitlement is something they don't have, and that's greed. Greed and pride as well. I know we mentioned greed and fear, but pride is actually something that grows as a result of being very greedy, too. It's when you think that you're better than everyone else.
Yeah.
But actually, we're made to work together. We're made to be one. Right? I really like the introduction where we say we are one. And so your strength can cover for my weaknesses, and my strength can cover for your weaknesses. And that way, we're able to work together and see the value in each other. We're able to see the importance of each other, and we're able to respect, support, and love one another. So it all starts simply with dialogue. Explain the differences. Discuss the differences. There's no need for war. There's no need for violence. Right? Dialogue. And that's what we also practice on the religious, the WARP offices, the World Alliance of religion, dialogue offices, right? We see that 80% of wars, about 80%, are started because of religion. So to combat that, Chairman Lee, he started the dialogue. And the reason for these dialogues is we just discuss our differences. I see the differences in yours, and I see the differences in mine. But more than the differences, we focus on the similarities.
Right.
But we're the same in this way.
Right.
And when you create similarities, you create familiarity. That familiarity becomes relation. That relation can lead to peace and order being
absolutely
maintained.
Right. We got a caller before we squeeze in. Jana, I'm opening the mic for 773-984. Got about a minute. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your thoughts.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. What's the name and where you're from?
So it's called Orso, huh?
Sorry? 773-984.
Hello?
Your
phone.
Hello, hi.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you got about 30 seconds. Now give us your name, where you're calling from, and your comment.
My name is Rashida Ali. I'm calling from Chicago. And I just wanted to say, my father was inducted into the military during the Korean War, and I found out what they had done was all the rail men doing that kind of work for the railroads, they were inducting them and putting them into war. So that caused a great recession and a lot of dysfunctionality in families. I know it's because I was the only child by him. And
well, that did happen. Well, Rashida, we thank you so much. Please, I need you to call in earlier next time because we want to hear what you got to say.
Yeah, please. I'm very interested in what you've got to say.
Brian, share with us about an exhibition that HWPL is having. So, Brian, if you can give us about the last minute about that and where people can see and hear it.
Right. So I can see time is almost up. So, of course, with the heart of being one and being in peace, there's going to be an exhibition actually taking place on December 10th. It's a photo exhibition, December 10th at 4 p.m. The venue is being determined, but there is an Eventbrite where people can reserve their ticket, and we can establish communication that way.
And what's that?
And it's actually to commemorate 100,000 people who actually agreed to come one in the scriptures. Actually, they agreed that they want to be one through the scriptures, and so Chairman Lee will be sharing what he shared at the graduation ceremony for them, and we'll be sharing those photos and explaining the history of this event, as well as discussing how we can all be one, not only in world relations and personal relations, but even within our religion. So
right.
I want everyone to come.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Sheshe, India, Zanyaba, Japan, Arigato, Korea, Kamsahamnida, Russia, Spasiba, Germany, Danke, Poland, Jeong Kunyung, France, Merci, Spain, Gracias, Italy, Grazie, Egypt, Shukran, Ghana, Madasi, Nigeria, Eshe, South Africa, Ngiyabonga, Senegal, Jared, Kenya, Asante, Israel, Toda, Pakistan, Shukriya, Afghanistan, Tashakur, Saudi Arabia, Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.